It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thank you for listening, and thank you so much to everyone who made a donation during our spring member drive. Support from people like Leanne in La Crosse sustains the news and information that you appreciate here on the Ideas Network. To ensure the resources are in place, we fundraise throughout the year, but that has all been affected at this time. And so if you missed the drive, your gift now at WPR.org is especially important. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, on this Earth Day, scientists say even though climate change did not cause the emergence of COVID-19, it could indirectly make the effects of a future pandemic worse. This is because climate change undermines the environmental conditions we need for good health, and it adds new stresses to our health systems. So what can be done about public health issues related to climate change, like insect-borne disease and water contamination, air pollution? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Jonathan Patz is director of the Global Health Institute and professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences and the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at UW-Madison. Dr. Patz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Kate, great to be back with you.
So we know that climate change is harmful to human health because of so many factors, including air pollution, natural disasters, you name it. But there's also a link that's less obvious between climate change and infectious disease. Help us understand the connection there.
Well, climate change affects many infectious diseases. These, especially those carried by insects, insect-borne diseases, because insects are cold-blooded. So imagine a mosquito that's carrying viruses or parasites. The air temperature dictates the body temperature of the mosquito. So it has a direct effect on transmission dynamics of diseases like malaria, dengue fever, Zika virus, West Nile virus. The other thing about climate change is intensity of rainfall. And when you have intense rainfall events, then you have water contamination. So there are links to cryptosporidiosis, like the big epidemic that hit Milwaukee in 1993. Cholera is affected by warmer sea surface temperatures. So, there are so many climate-sensitive infectious diseases, and that's why climate affects these diseases.
Let's look more closely at interspecies infections. In a warmer world, animals are more likely to transmit diseases to other species, including humans. Why is that?
Well, the issue of, this cross-species, it's actually called spillover. A virus will spill over from one animal to another and then even into humans, which is what has happened with COVID-19. And it's a combination of land use change and climate change. When I mean land use change, deforestation is a big driver of land use change. And that disrupts habitats where wildlife are forced to move and congregate, and you can change the density of a particular species that may have a disease transmitting amongst individuals. And then imagine forcing that population to move when you've destroyed their habitat and they come into more close contact. The disease can intensify and then spill over, and they, shedding viruses, for example. And the climate change aspect comes in when you think about climate's effect on habitats, where species have to move because they can no longer withstand temperatures. And you have forest fires. So this combination of climate change and this degrading natural ecosystems, they come together to, combine to change species distribution and range. And that's where we come into problems of this imbalance, where diseases that wouldn't naturally occur because of a rich biodiversity and species spread out in their natural habitat to being confined and coming into contact more frequently. Of course, then there's the other aspect of human behavior, the wet markets of China that intensified issues where you you know, you have species piled on top of each other in cages. And there, that was a ripe situation for the spillover from one species to another.
A ripe situation there. As you're saying, climate change has meant more disease from animals like bats and monkeys. Where do you see that connection with the emergence of the coronavirus?
Well, bats are they're the main reservoir for coronaviruses. And when you, you know, disturb their ecosystems and you may, you know, have bats that are changing in their density, that's one issue. But then when you have these wet markets where you have illegal wildlife trade, you have intentionally raised wildlife mixing with other animals in these these concentrated wildlife, these wet markets in China, then you have a situation where a coronavirus, say from a bat, can intermix with another animal. Now, one I do want to point out, you know, bats are probably one of the most important species for our own survival. Nectar-feeding bats are pollinators. Fruit bats are. They disseminate seeds, and they're nicknamed farmers of the tropics. They eat tons of mosquitoes. They're insectivores. So bats in their natural habitat are extremely valuable for us and for our well-being. But in these unnatural systems, there are stories in Australia, the Hendra virus that was killing horses and people. It was from the deforestation in Indonesia and fires that forced those bats to congregate in city parks and around horse paddocks. That was where you had that eruption, the Hendra virus. But right now, the COVID, the novel coronavirus that's causing the COVID-19 pandemic, the genetics of that look like it's a combination of bat coronavirus and pangolin, this anteater that's been illegally. It's an endangered species. It's been illegally traded. And so the genetics look very close to coming out of a pangolin and definitely not manipulated out of a laboratory.
We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Patz, who directs the Global Health Institute at UW-Madison. On this Earth Day, we're looking at our climate. We're looking at it through the lens of the coronavirus. What are your questions about the link between climate change and increased rates of infectious diseases? What are your questions about interspecies transmission and spillover? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Patz, let's talk a little bit more about that, because there has been some sentiment that this coronavirus came from a lab environment. What do we know there?
So I have read some of the latest papers that have come out that have very specifically looked at that question. Did this come out of a laboratory? And there are several papers now, very detailed papers, looking at the mutations, very specific mutations in these viruses. You know, you have to have these animal viruses need to mutate such that they are able to attach to human cells, which they wouldn't normally. And it's a matter of these viruses recombining across species and then having mutations that allow them to bind to human cells, that, you know, that's when you get the problem. And there have been very detailed analysis of genetic trees and looking at the similarities of very specific genes and genetic analysis that show such similarity to pangolin and bat, that you know, these are studies, usually you don't get 99% agreement, but these are studies that are very conclusive, that show that for sure this did not come out of a laboratory, that this is very close to natural, natural coronaviruses found. And for reasons that are over my head, because I'm not you know, I'm not a molecular biologist, but I've looked at these studies and I've talked to colleagues that are expert virologists that say it is very conclusive that this came out of a natural combination and not man-made out of a laboratory.
Let's look at land use a little bit further. How does the destruction of animals' habitat and how we change the use of the land and change an ecosystem, what connection does that have to disease and climate change?
Well, there's a lot of interrelationship between land use and climate change. For example, deforestation, you know, that reduces the ability for the earth to absorb CO2. Trees absorb CO2 and take greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. So deforestation is part of the climate change story. Even though most of it is from burning fossil fuels, you have that element of losing the carbon sink when you cut down forests. The reason that we are changing the landscape, are there many, they're from agriculture, and there are, you know, aspects of cutting forests for pastures, cutting forests for wood. There are the industrial farming and issues of cutting down forests for oil palm, things like that. There are many reasons we're changing the landscape. The other aspect here, though, is the human intrusion into natural systems. You know, bushmeat hunting, and that takes humans into more contact with wildlife. So this combination of habitat destruction, but also human intrusion into natural systems, those are things that give us an increased risk of these newly emerging diseases from wildlife.
Dr. Jonathan Patz explaining the connection between our changing climate and the spread of infectious disease. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What can the global response to COVID-19 teach us about a response to climate change? We're exploring that question on this 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Climate change and COVID-19 are both public health threats, but they're playing out across vastly different timeframes. Dr. Jonathan Patz directs the UW-Madison Global Health Institute. He's an international authority on global warming, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Rich is with us from Rhinelander this morning. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. It seems to me it took humankind quite a long time to reach 7.2 billion units on this earth, and exponentiality is in the news these days. There are even little TV segments that show animals returning to streets that human beings have vacated. I'm wondering if the doctor can address the whole idea of population growth as an explosion of population over the globe really being something that merits renewed attention.
Rich, thanks.
So, interesting question. And I think that when you look at the root of these issues of the state of our global environment, they come down to two things. And one is the number of humans on Earth and the per person consumption of natural resources. And I would say that, you know, we are having much better, you know, so those are the root causes, but we're having much better progress as far as family planning and being able to stabilize some of these fast growing populations. But we are not having as much success in the per person consumption of natural resources. So I think both of those issues are important. Certainly we need to look at our Earth's population, but I think where our problem is in the amount of energy consumption per person. That's where we're having trouble. You know, this epidemic, you know, talking about wildlife in the streets and people staying at home, there's another thing that I think all of us have seen lately in the news, and that's these beautiful pictures of clean air in the most polluted cities in India and other parts of the world. And when you look at those pictures and you see that, you know, since our global economy has shut down because of this pandemic, much of our economy is driven by fossil fuels. And when you recognize the fact that air pollution kills 7 million people every year, I think here's a big lesson when you say, well, when we restart our global economy after this pandemic, do we really want to go back to this outdated hazardous energy source? You know, burning oil and coal takes us backwards. And so this is a sort of a silver lining lesson in this pandemic when you see clear skies over New Delhi, India.
Let's bring in Scott now in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. There's been a lot of talk about the wet markets in China. And I'm kind of concerned about the racism towards Asian Americans and other folks. But here in the U.S., we've got the factory farms. I was wondering if you touch on the potential of diseases coming out of awful conditions of factory farms where animals are packed so tightly together.
So, a question about CAFOs there, these factory farms that Scott is wondering about.
Yes, the CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, pose their own risk. And, that high density of animals often requires use of antibiotics. So when you are using antibiotics in the feed of these domestic animals, that leads to a different emerging disease problem of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So that is an enormous problem, as well as all of the waste, the animal waste that comes from these CAFOs poses a threat to our drinking water. So there are some big issues with concentrated animal feeding operations, for sure.
Dr. Patz, as climate change has accelerated in recent decades, have we seen more pandemics? Is there any relationship there?
Well, we have. It is documented that we are seeing more emerging diseases around the world. It's hard to disentangle how many of those are from on the ground destruction of habitats, especially from deforestation and climate change. There is evidence of diseases moving higher in altitude, and altitude is a good surrogate for colder temperatures, the higher you go up. So there is evidence of diseases moving upward like that, and also changing in their distribution geographically. But it is complicated when you have to combine climate effects and on-the-ground destruction of natural habitats. But we are, if you look at the monitoring of emerging infectious diseases, especially these coming from animals, they are on the rise.
We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Patz, director of the Global Health Institute at UW-Madison. On this Earth Day, we're looking at our warming planet and the link to infectious diseases. David from Upper Michigan called in, couldn't stay with us, Dr. Patz, but David wants to know if there is a connection between forever chemicals called PFAS and people being more susceptible to infection.
Well, I think that I don't know specifically about PFAS effect there, but anything that reduces our immune system. And I think that if you look across our country and actually in many parts of the world, the increase in chronic diseases, obesity, diabetes, these types of diseases do reduce our immune system. So in some ways, I also work in the area of chronic diseases and the problem of physical inactivity. Exercise increases our immune system quite a bit. And so to the extent that we have more sedentary lifestyles and automobile dependency around cities, the less we are actively traveling, biking and walking, that also puts a dent in our immune system. So there lots of factors. Anything that reduces our immunity puts us at higher risk. And of course, going back to the other question, other issues like antibiotic resistance and things like that make our immune system very hard to deal with those types of those types of infections when we can't have help from antibiotics.
Some environmentalists have argued the response to COVID-19 proves that global leaders do have the ability to come together to fight threats to humanity. What are your thoughts there through that lens of climate change?
Well, you know, this is also a wake-up call that not only are we at risk from pandemics that in this case are rooted in environmental degradation, but we also have learned that we can have a huge global response and have these moonshot types of behavioral change and interventions where we've completely turned things upside down in a rapid response to this pandemic. Well, climate change itself is a global health emergency. And when this pandemic is over 2 or 3 years from now, and we've got a vaccine, hopefully within 2 years, that, you know, we have climate change as a global health issue looming. And so if we can take this level of intense intervention around the world, I think that it demands that we, and it shows that we can take this level of action against an even larger global health emergency, which is climate change, which can touch us in so many ways, from heat waves to infectious diseases to malnutrition. And so if we can if we can change our economy and get off of fossil fuels and reduce the deforestation, these are steps that we need to take, and we need to take them at the same level as we're responding to COVID, because climate change is a health challenge.
Dr. Patz, thank you for joining us.
Kate, it's an honor to be with you again.
Dr. Jonathan Patz is director of the Global Health Institute and professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences and the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at UW-Madison. Just ahead, loneliness, anxiety, grief, dealing with the mental health impacts of the coronavirus. We look at the acute emotional challenges and what that means for the future of mental health care in America. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.